With last year's supposed end of the world as foretold by the Mayan calendar, or lack of Mayan calendar, one might think that we would be done, at least for a while, with the topic. No. As the Sacramento Bee newspaper proclaimed last night about a bevy of summer movies, Hollywood loves a good, open parentheses, of the world, close parentheses. Just this summer, this is the end, Rapture Palooza, It's a Disaster, The World's End, and those are just the comedies. Because we were also gifted, and I use that term generously, with Tom Cruise's Oblivion, Will Smith's After Earth, and coming Brad Pitt's World War Z. And I'm not even counting the end of the universe stuff like Star Trek's Into Darkness. And you have to wonder about the end of the United States ones, White House Down, Olympus Has Fallen, and then our most pressing question, where does Iron Man 3 fit? So the question isn't really who doesn't love a good ending of the world, at least in movies, but why do we visit and revisit this topic over and over? And why now? And I'd like to start off with one clear thing first. Though many conversations about how messed up the world is, they often turn to blaming, and this sermon isn't interested in that. And this sermon is particularly not interested in what turns out to be repeated often, at least in the world of the internet and magazines and media, which is a blame game that involves millennial bashing, which is the older generation, and I'm not quite sure when I joined it, blames the younger one for the mess of the world. In fact, it's really quite the opposite, isn't it? And just to make sure we're all on the same page, to catch up on all those names for the generations, I think many people know the baby boomers, and there are the Gen Xers, of which I am a proud member. And then there's Gen Y, which is known as the millennials. We have many here in the room, typically born between 1980 and 2000, though some will say it's 1984 to 2002, because it is an art, not a science, to name a generation. And it does turn out there's a lot of millennial bashing out there. For instance, here's a quote from an infamous Time magazine cover article just a few months ago. Quote, not only do millennials lack the kind of empathy that allows them to feel concerned for others, but they even have trouble intellectually understanding others' points of view. Not only do I disagree wholeheartedly with this point of view, I am betting big. Betting the whole house, the whole darn shooting match, in fact, the whole planet, that this is not true. Matt Bores, a millennial editorial cartoonist, defends his generation and stands up against such bashing by saying, millennials aren't marrying, buying houses, having kids later than previous generations because they're sitting around trying to beat a video game. They're delaying adulthood because the job market is the worst it's been since the Great Depression. And with appropriate cheekiness, Bores finished his rant in the following way. Stop hating on millennials. We didn't create this mess. We came late to the banquet and we were served crumbs, which we will Instagram before we eat. We know it's not just the job market or the wider international economy that is going to HE double toothpicks in a handbasket. We've all got some serious worries about the health of the planet. So maybe this is why we are seeing all these movies and television shows and cable shows and zombies. because it is all around us, and we all, no matter the generation, are trying desperately to make sense of it, to see our way out of this mess and into the light of a decent future. Regardless of which generation you call your tribe, there are several ways to respond. Tuning out is one. Focusing on the pleasures of now is another. Becoming completely paralyzed with fear is yet another. The Unitarian Universalist Reverend John Buren names this dynamic for us and implores a different response. These are his words. In the face of our shared oppression of the earth itself, there is an urgency, but it must not be marked by apocalyptic fear, easy forms of despair, unrealistic approaches, or an impatience that fails to persuade. Rather, it must be an urgent need to reconstruct and renovate the kind of hope that is at the heart of progressive spirituality. But what is needed is the kind of realistic hope that can make our work together persistent, patient, and persuasive. You see, I believe that how we nurture this hope for a possible future is by being this hope in the here and now. Though crises can trigger the collapse of all that is good and bring out the worst in us, it can also be cause for people to come together in stunning ways. And we have seen this over and over. Existential crises can be a turning point, the very danger moving us towards the next existential, perhaps even evolutionary leap. Buddhist teacher and environmentalist Joanna Macy poses the question, could the creativity and survival instinct of humanity as a whole, or even of life as a whole, act through us? Here, connected consciousness stems from a widening of our self-interest where we are guided by the intention to act for the well-being of all life. Within Buddhism, that intention is known as bodhicitta, and bodhicitta moves our focus from personal well-being to collective well-being. Again, those were the words of Joanna Macy. A bigger picture of change in this world emerges when we see our lives not as opportunities for a single Instagram moment, but as part of a larger photo mosaic that combines your Instagram pic with yours, and yours, and yours, and mine. Photo mosaic, that is the art when we look from far away, we see one large picture, but when we get close up, we see that it's made up of thousands, tens of thousands of individual images. The bigger a picture emerges, and that bigger picture of change emerges out of the smaller ways in which you exercise your power. Each individual step doesn't have to make a big impact on its own because we can understand benefit of an action that may not be visible at the level of which that action is taking. This reminds me of the message we heard from our reading today about the spirit of our times. It doesn't just happen and we are bystanders, an appreciative or critical audience. We are part of that spirit of now, that zeitgeist. This is what John O'Donohue said. The spirit of a time is an incredibly subtle, yet hugely powerful force, and it is comprised of the mentality and the spirit of all individuals together. Therefore, the way you look at things is not simply a private matter. Your outlook concretely affects what is going on. The picture we paint, or draw, or videotape, or play with our music, or blog about, or post, co-creates that spirit of now, and helps to make the future what it can and will be. Tim DeChristopher is a millennial environmental activist who tried to intervene in the leasing of lands for drilling and mining in Utah. And in April this past year, he was released from 21 months in prison, federal prison, for taking part in an auction for such leases, bidding on them without the intent to actually buy them, trying to subvert the system and save the land. Tim was recently asked about climate change, about whether it meant that the earth is, rather than warming, is actually dying. A scary, scary thought. And here is what Tim said. I think both the planet and human beings are resilient. And I think there will be some kind of survival. The thing that scares me is what we will have to do in order to survive. I worry about whether we'll turn against each other. You know, I mean, I don't think 7 billion people can survive in a climate-constricted world. Tim continued, we know we're going down this path of unprecedented change, and so it is really important who is calling the shots at this time. The collapse of industrial civilization with an ignorant, apathetic citizenry, afraid of its own government, and feels like they have to accept what corporations want to do, now that's really scary. That's really ugly. And that's, I think, the big challenge we face now. So not everyone agrees with this perspective, that climate change is happening and there's little we can do to stop it, that our focus now is on adaptation. But more and more environmentalists are coming to that point of view. And so if the world is going to end, if that's a given about what we no longer have control, then let's step into that place where there is room for creativity and agency. If this world is going to end, then let us create space and possibility that says this world may end as we know it, but not the world. A wise piece of advice for approaching this kind of adaptive change is to begin with the end in mind. It reminds us that all things are created twice. The first creation is the mental one that begins in our imaginations, and the second is a physical one that we create or enact. If this world is going to end, then let us imagine the world ending and another emerging. And what is this new world, this new way of life that emerges? Is it the one of the Hunger Games? Another movie we haven't put on our list yet? Or is it something else, something more connected, with a citizenry more awake and aware, involved and engaged, making decisions on behalf of all peoples, including those whose voices are marginalized and who are invisible? How do we begin to make our own movies, not the ones just on our heads, but putting them on YouTube, on Vimeo as well? The first scene would be about here and now. And the middle scene would focus on the facts that the choices you and I make and the attitudes that you and I have now influence what happens next. And the final scenes are of our hope, not our fear, depicted by how the protagonist, that's you, and all of you, how the protagonists can be active in moving us in that direction. It's much too late to get that movie on the big screen this summer, but we can get it on the small screens soon and ongoing. May it be so. Amen.